Hello and welcome to You Don't Know Lit. I'm Nick Argyris. Today I'm looking for the Happy March Madness. Today I'm looking for the most for the best basketball book ever written. And who more qualified than two high school English teachers, Ian and Joe?
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and say I might be the least qualified person to talk about basketball. But hey, a theme's a theme. I'm Joe Holshue, high school English teacher and tennis coach. And Nick, if you're looking for the best book about basketball, I have brought the only book about basketball I've ever read. It's called They Call Me Coach, the 1988 novel. No. Not a novel. 1988 autobiography by John Wooden. Famous, of course, you know, UCLA coach.
All right. I didn't know that. So we're learning already. Ian?
Friends, Romans, litheads, lend me your ears. I come to bury buckets, not to praise them. My name is Ian DeYoung, a.k.a. Dr. Dribbles. And if you're looking for a basketballist book, I brought Kobe Bryant's 2018 masterpiece, The Mamba Mentality, which is about basketball.
May your earlobes turn into assholes and shit on your shoulders.
Hey, the plot doesn't fucking matter at all. This is what I think it's about.
If you look closely enough, every author was at some point a racist.
Audiobooks don't count, right?
All art is quite useless.
Who told you that?
Fun fact, that is how Joe laughs.
Guys, am I going to learn how to play basketball from listening to this episode? I need to set a bar.
Almost certainly.
You will learn how to coach a basketball team from my book. Is that good? Like coaching a team?
It's a start.
My book will tell you how to play basketball. Not the rules, but definitely how to cheat.
Okay. Ooh.
How to cheat. Interesting. Yes.
Ooh. Oh my goodness. I can't wait to get into Kobe Bryant.
All right. Well, I just kind of want to start tossing this pigskin around. So let's go over our show rules quickly. Rule number one.
First though, hey, can I just interject here?
Yeah. Interrupt.
I don't know if you guys heard it at the top of the show, but I'm trying to. Kobe Bryant gave himself the nickname Black Mamba because he liked like the combination of speed and accuracy that a mamba has when it strikes. And I would like to give myself a nickname in honor of Kobe Bryant. Okay. And I would like you guys to call me Dr. Dribbles.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We heard that. We heard. We ignored
it. And I'd really be a thing that happens.
Hey, Ian?
Yeah. Hey, yeah.
You got it.
Thank you.
For the rest of this podcast, you're going to be called Dr. Dribbles. Sound good?
Thank you. Yeah, I love it. It's great. It's a good time. It's like in the spirit of the holiday.
Yeah, in this hot basketball season. Well, that's very exciting to solidify such a permanent nickname. So thank you. Guys, don't interrupt me again. So rule number one is omit needless
rules.
That is
rules. Not rule number one.
Omit needless rules. End of rules.
Yeah, Nick, follow your own rules. Rule master, rule thyself.
Rule number one, only unavoidable spoilers, gentlemen. Rule number two, omit needless words, Joe. And rule number three, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. And I feel like that is especially important on this particular episode, which I assume involves winning and losing. I don't know. I don't want to get too far ahead.
As John Wooden once said, you can't win a basketball game, but you can sure as heck lose one.
John Wooden did not ever say that. He never said that.
How much cursing is in your book, Joe?
Oh, so almost none. Zero. John Wooden is not
clean,
a cursor.
Huh?
He's very clean.
Okay. Ian, how much cursing is in yours?
I would say mild, like he doesn't really get into this George Carlin's seven words, but he says some things like hell and damn.
Right.
Those
like
are the
son
spectrums.
Of a bitch, I bet he says.
Yeah. Does he have one he swear that he uses more than the other ones? Like he calls everybody bastards. Like, oh, you bastard. Yeah. Like that.
Does you he? Son of
no,
a gun.
No, he doesn't really call
does
people.
Kobe Bryant do
Kobe
that?
Bryant wasn't known for his Irish sounding insults and epithets.
Oh, you bastard.
You bastard.
Joe, do you want to take 30 seconds and tell me about your coach?
Yeah, I would love to. Nick, I actually have to change my first line because it starts out by saying, Nick, you have heard of John Wooden. Nick, you have never heard of John Wooden, but he's kind of a big deal. Okay, he's widely regarded as the best coach of any sport to ever do the job. He was the men's basketball coach for nearly 30 years at UCLA and in one 12-year stretch won 10 national championships. His team set winning streak records that stand to this day, and not a person on the planet like has a bad thing to say about him. The most charming thing about him, though, is that he's just an Indiana farm kid who grew up to be a basketball genius. He's also super quotable.
Interesting. Why doesn't he have a rule on this show like some of our more quotable coaches out there?
Yeah, I think after I worry about Vince Lombardi on this show because after you hear about John Wooden, we might
are you going to rock our world?
We might have to change one of the show rules.
OMG. All right, bold. Ian, you can also have 30 seconds to talk.
Thank you.
Followed by probably some additional time.
Great. I'm going to start with a quote. Warning, if you are going to invest your time in reading this book, be prepared for an adventure in high-level basketball. That's from Phil Jackson's introduction to Kobe Bryant's 2018 book, The Mamba Mentality. And Phil is kind of right. Maybe adventure is too strong a word, but Bryant does blend personal history, pop philosophy, and matter-of-fact trash-talking to create an entertaining window into his decades of on-the-court dominance. There it is. Thank you. Wow.
Fantastic.
Folks, this is a momentous day in You Don't Know Lit History. We move to the soundboard phase.
You've waited patiently. We've finally arrived.
You've stuck with us for what seems like 800 years.
Mm-hmm. Our Patreon, we asked everybody to chip in 25 cents, and we finally
got
did
the
it.
App. We took a long time. The
soundboards are weirdly expensive.
Strangely. Neither of these sound too exciting.
Hey, mine says an adventure in high-level basketball.
It sounds like...
Don't you want...
Yeah.
And mine has a lot of good, clean living and, like, common sense.
That Indiana farm life.
This kind of reminds me of how Michael Jordan has a phobia of water, which... I guess throughout the whole episode, I'll just kind of be sharing some Michael Jordan facts.
I think that was probably just like his excuse for only drinking Gatorade. It was probably like a promotion of some sort, like some sort of long-term advertisement.
Like Gatorade paid him to say he was afraid of water.
Right. He's like, water? I hate the stuff. I never touch it.
Yeah, yeah.
Obey your thirst.
Man, that's a bold move on Gatorade's part to go up against the actual liquid of life. Like, we're going to do attack advertising against water.
Against water. I think it's smart. I think it's smart. Joe.
They're disrupting the market.
Disrupt us.
All right. I prepare to be disrupted. Lynette, prepare to be disrupted. Oh, my God.
It's a good word. Joseph, please take the b-ball first and go first.
Okay. So I guess...
Take the rock.
I think we should maybe start. Good. I've got the rock.
Thanks, guys.
I will not be passing. I think we have to start by talking about our sporting pedigrees, right? Like I'm going to go out on a limb. Yep. Nick, I've seen you play some sports.
Thank you.
Yes. You and I, as you know, are involved in an annual pickleball tournament. So I've seen you play that. I know for a fact you have a basketball hoop in your driveway that you play on from time to time.
Yeah. You played yesterday. Shot some hoops around.
Did you guys play sports growing up? Like, is sporting part of your life? Was it part of your youth?
I played 3 games of softball and I quit after I got beamed in the arm because I turned quickly and I didn't want to catch the ball. So I turned quickly.
Right. Smart.
And then I quit. And then that was the last time I played professional sports. Ian, what about you? Similar story?
As John Wooden once said, quitters never win, but winners sometimes quit.
Winners sometimes quit. So okay. I guess that's a compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a lot of enthusiasm for organized sport. I love playing various things. I also have a ton of competitiveness to the point where when I was younger, I would cry when my team would lose, like really angry tears. I don't have a lot of skill, but I make up for the lack of skill with just an overwhelming amount of anger and enthusiasm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Hustle.
I play tennis. I play tennis regularly.
Yeah. That's why they call you Dr. Dribbles.
Absolutely.
That does actually make me wonder if Ian cries after he loses these episodes. Hmm. Like if he still angrily cries.
Maybe.
Ian, words, thoughts on that?
Well, I got special diapers for my eyes. So yes.
All right. So Nick, you asked earlier. So I grew up playing
quickly
some
redirecting
sports.
From that.
Anyway.
Anyway.
A lucrative conversation that was, Joe, huh? Why don't we move on?
Okay, well, let me just tell you about John Wood and the Jerks.
Okay, I have a question right off the bat.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yes. Perfect time to ask that.
Did you hear me say right off the bat that's a baseball reference? Sports. Listen, Joe, I don't know much about John Wooden, but I know he basketball coached, and mm-hmm. I know that the floor of a basketball zone is made of wood. Here's my question. Yes. Was he named after the material that makes up the court?
Ian, John Wooden was so successful, I think that wood might be named after him. Oh, like, I think when they were deciding what to build...
Sense, guys.
No, I think when they were deciding what to build basketball courts
so
from,
stupid.
They're like, what should we build it from? And they're like, well, John Wooden's pretty good. How about wood?
You can't...
There used to be tile.
Respond to that, Joe. You just have to keep going.
Okay. Well, I'm going to keep going. All right. So, Nick, I guess let me give you a little bit of background on John Wooden. He's he's a very winning coach.
Sounds like it.
He coached for like 30 years at UCLA. He won 10 championships or 12. I'm sorry. He won 12 championships, but 10 of those were won in a 12-year stretch. He was the basketball coach of the year NCAA's like, I don't know, a dozen times. He was the first ever person to enter the Basketball Hall of Fame as both a player and a coach. And pretty much like every gymnasium he ever set foot in is now named after him, including the post office in his daughter's hometown.
They play sports in the post office?
No, they don't, but that's how cool he is. They're like, hey, we should name the post office after this guy.
I wonder what kind of a sport you could play in a post office.
Ping pong. Probably.
Clearly. Yeah. Definitely.
You could play almost any sport in a post office. Joe, where do you want to start? Yeah, if it's big enough, that's a good point, Ian. Joe, where do you want to start with?
Okay.
What is this book about? Does he write it? Is this an autobiography, you say? Or
so, yep, this is an autobiography. He wrote it in 1988, looking back on his career. It follows him like from his boyhood all the way up through the end of his coaching career, which ended about something like 10 years earlier at that point. John Wooden would live until, just about as long as Kobe Bryant lived. He would live until about 2010. And it covers most of that time.
Joe, is there anything you could tell me that would interest me more than what you've already told me?
Yes. Okay.
Is there any way you could engage me on this book?
Nick, do you hear this right here? Do you hear that?
It's the sound of a basketball dribbling.
Sounds like a bunch of dead doves being dropped. Like a pile of dead doves being dropped on the floor.
I'm holding in front of me John Wooden's, like, he set out to put down everything he knew about success on a single page. And I am holding that page in front of me. And it's a pyramid. Right. So I am holding in front of me John Wooden's Pyramid of Success, signed by John Wooden, or at least this thing that I printed off of Google Images has John Wooden's signature on it. Okay. And I want to play a little bit of a game.
Oh, hell
with
yeah.
You. All right. Here's the thing you have to know about John Wooden, though. Nick, you alluded to this right away. When you think of a coach, you think of like a yelling, screaming, swearing, like spitting guy,
drooling, right? Just like rabs, like like barking, just foaming at the mouth. That's what I think of.
Nibbling on trees.
Okay, that I want you to get that image out of your head because that is not the coach that John Wooden was. Okay,
do not think about them.
Don't think about the trees.
Stop thinking.
Is he
about
wearing
spinning.
A suit? Because that's now he's naked. That's out
of
too.
Of course, John Wooden wears a suit.
Okay,
yes,
does
of course
he have
he wears
a wooden
suit.
Leg?
Jesus, Nick, he doesn't. All right, I'm going to move on. So I
can see it clear as day. He's fully nude with a wooden leg.
So Nick, I want you to think back to those three softball games that you played, and I want you to think back to your coach. And Ian, I want you to think back to all the temper tantrums that you threw and like the consoling words that your coaches gave you.
Yeah.
And on this pyramid of success, it is built out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
Oh, gosh. Yes, 13 things that John Wooden said to calm people down.
13 attributes that the most impressive athletes, 13 attributes that you need to be successful, not just in basketball, but in life. I think that we can rattle off a lot of these attributes.
I think we can do this.
So I think we'll take alternating turns, right? Ian, Nick, Nick, or Nick, Ian, Nick, Ian. And let's see how many of these we can get. I will tell you if it is on the pyramid or not.
I really want to go first, but Ian, would you please, Dr. Dribbles, would you take the honor on this one?
Yes. Wooden leg. You got to have a wooden leg.
No, no, that's not on there. It's not on there. Hey, is he trying to... did somebody pay you off to lose this game or something? I'm going to go determination.
Nick, I'm going to take that for enthusiasm. It brushes off on those with whom you come into contact with, and you must truly be determined in what you are doing. So, Nick, congratulations. You got one of the pillars of success.
All right, just 1 second.
Well, you don't have to do that every time.
Well, we got to use the soundboard here. Our Patreon fans are going to be very disappointed.
We paid for it.
Yeah, we got. They paid for it, really. Okay. We don't really have a Patreon.
Well, I mean, I contributed a bunch of money to that Patreon.
Yeah, Ian just gave me some money. He's my only fan. It's $10,000 a month. We have one subscriber.
That's so sad. Hey, is it my turn?
Yeah, it is
it's
now.
Your turn,
as John Wooden famously said, a good basketball player can't be a great basketball player unless he has extra toes.
Nope.
Ooh, Ian, I'm going to have to give you your second strike.
Yeah, he doesn't even have toes.
Not wooden leg or extra toes. Nick, the ball is in your court.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and say like they've evolved faster than everybody. So they're physically more more fit to do the sport. Yeah. So they're taller and stronger.
I'm going to put that down as conditioning, and I'm going to give you a bonus one here as skill, Nick, that good basketball players and like, yes.
Okay. So these aren't all mental. These are some physical attributes as well.
You've pretty much crossed off all of the physical ones.
There's only one physical one that's important. Have skill.
Be in condition and have some skill.
Like
yes.
In this pyramid, is that the top? Because that feels really important.
It's skill is actually in the heart of the pyramid. It is the center block.
I'm going to go ahead and guess heart.
Heart. Ooh, I am going to
wait. Why did you get two now? What's
fuck
this
it.
Now?
Fuck it. Rock and roll.
Ian. Okay. Yeah. I guess it is Ian's. Ian, it's your turn.
We've entered the Wild West.
Yeah. I think as award-winning coach John Wooden famously said, a good basketball player won't be a great basketball player until he has mad yo-yo skills.
Mad yo-yo skills. Ian, I'm afraid that is your third and final strike because that is how basketball works.
All right. Let me get the last 10.
It is not extra toes. It is not mad skills or mad yo-yo skills, and it is not wooden legs. Nick, go ahead.
Yeah, let me just get the last 10 real quick. All right. Did I say heart?
You said heart. I'm going to give you team spirit.
Oh, okay. Spirit. Yeah. These are all good. These are all like org chart, like marketing words that really all mean nothing, but also the same thing. Joe just finished, so we don't care anymore.
So there's a whole bunch of these. Loyalty, friendship, industriousness. friendship goes with loyalty and cooperation.
Okay.
Next. Self-control, poise, confidence. I liked those two an awful lot. But one of the things that I think is coolest, and congratulations, you both did terribly at that game.
Congratulations, Ian.
One of the things that I think is coolest about John Wooden is like when he talks about basketball, he does not talk about winning basketball games, right? Like he does not talk about like, guys, we're going to go out there and we're going to play this defense and we're going to beat them. Like he talks about how to live your life in an admirable way and how that translates to the basketball court. And that's like one of the biggest things that comes out of this book.
Is it just about basketball or is it about sports? That's my question.
No, it's about... Well, it's about basketball, and then it's about life. Like, John Wooden's philosophies have been, Nick, when you say this is every org chart I've ever seen, right? Like, that is because, like, a lot of, like, a lot of his thoughts, a lot of his philosophies have been widely adopted, not just across other sports, but in business, in government, like in, you know, motivational speeches and things like that. Mm.
Is this a money grab or is this an actual good book?
It's a pretty good book. It's a good book. The guy wrote a lot of books. Huh. To be fair, okay. He didn't make very much money. Like, for as successful as he was, he made very, very little money. At one point, the LA Lakers offered him a head coaching job, and they reportedly offered him 10 times his salary as the coach of UCLA, which...
You know who did make a lot of money?
Uh-huh.
Michael Jordan's first wife, who got $168 million in their first divorce.
Wow. Pretty good. So, Litheads, if you too want to be rich, you can marry Michael Jordan in 1989 and divorce him in 1998. And
I gotta send her our Patreon link.
Anything to take the pressure off of my bank account, seriously.
Oh,
I'll be honest with you guys. Yeah. This is unsustainable from what I'm saying. Is John Wooden one of these guys that says, like, if you're a good dude, you can manage to be a good basketball player, but if you're a bad dude, you can never be a good... Like, does he believe that there is a positive direct correlation between your moral fiber and your basketball prowess? Or is the point more like, who cares if you're a good baller of baskets? You got to be a good dude first. I'm trying to figure out, like, because his thing is about basketball, right? But here he is telling us all about how to be moral and decent. And I'm confused, sort of like, where does he get off? How dare he?
Yeah.
How dare you, right? Who does he think he is? Exactly. So, great question. So John Wooden acknowledges that skill exists, right? When he's talking about coaching basketball, he makes no excuse that like he coached like Bill Walton. He coached Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right? Like he understands, like, hey, skill really matters. But he thinks of equal importance there is the character of his players. He tells a couple stories about like very talented basketball players that he rescinded offers from because of character problems, or like because he met his parents at their house and he didn't like how the kid treated his mother, things like that. So like, I think he would say that you can be a great athlete. Right. You can be a great, like incredibly skilled, but you will not be elite unless you have those character traits that support that. Right. Like your skill, your ability can get you to the top, but it's your character that keeps you there.
Does he point to one or many basketball players that are like, yep, they are perfect people?
Okay, so it's really funny because he talks a lot, like a thing that keeps coming up in his book is he keeps saying, like, my entire career and now in retirement, people always ask me, like, who's my best player? Who are my best teams, right? Like, who's my best team? Who's my best player? And he always says, I refuse to answer that question. But the other thing I will say is there's like three chapters in this book devoted to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Okay. So we still don't know.
Mm-hmm. My favorite thing about John Wooden,
okay,
maybe should have led with this, maybe, is that his book is interspersed with poetry that sometimes writes and sometimes he just collects. John Wooden was an English teacher before he was a basketball coach, which
shoot ball in hoop blowing in the wind.
Okay, so that's the second best thing about his poetry. The best thing is that it exists in this book. The second best thing about it is it's like totally non-pretentious and like kind of like fun verse that he puts in there. Like,
give us all a taste.
At one point, this is not a poem that he wrote. This is a poem that he just includes. He says, no written word nor spoken plea can teach our youth what they should be, nor all the books on all the shelves. It's what the teachers are themselves. Talking, of course, about the importance of being a role model in the lives of his players.
It sounds like it was in the Lorax.
Well, but that's like the idea though, right, Joe? It's about sort of sending a simple, positive message.
Yeah, and John Wooden is like very, yes, simple, yes, positive, yes, quotable, right? Like with this continual, like little nuggets of wisdom. Can I break off another short poem for you?
Break it off.
For who can ask more of a man than giving all within his span? Giving all, it seems to me, is not so far from victory. And like, the one of the cool things about his book is like, he'll be talking about this crazy game that he had against, I don't know, Indiana, Kansas, whoever the dominant team is at the time.
The big games.
And halfway through, he'll just like drop a poem in. And it's, I don't know, it's kind of admirable. I really dig it.
Does always seem to be boiled down, right? It's like just a very simple metaphor, sports.
Well, like,
is there any overt metaphors or simple metaphors in this book, Joe, that you'd like to share?
Well, I think it's like when you coach for 30 years and you win like 85% of your games, I think at a certain point, like, people ask you, how did you do it? And, you know, you have to come up with an answer. So I do think like character is a good one.
What is the connection between coaching and teaching? Any?
I could answer that with a poem, but it's actually pretty long, so I don't think I will right now. But
all right, just skim it, summarize it. We'll get the
read every fourth word.
The every fourth word. Here it comes. Let's see how this turns out. Every fourth word.
You speed read poetry. You just read every fourth word.
Yeah. Let's see how this goes. Let's see if we can get the gist of it.
Yeah.
I think it's gonna go great.
They reply. Could more company, statesman, unbiased Webster, doctor, steady bend, lifeblood's beside, rise. I think I'm going to stop this exercise.
That's amazing. That's brilliant poetry.
Wow, it kind of rhymed, too. Most of it really rhymed.
It did.
I think we may have something. Or nothing. It's really hard to tell.
It is tough to tell. Nick, the very last thing I'm going to say is, you asked me like what the overt thing here is John Wooden is very clear. And one of the reasons this book spoke to me, he's very clear that the entire time he coached through all of his wildly successful seasons, he always thought of himself as a teacher first. And he always thought that when young men came into his program at UCLA as freshmen, his job was to make them good citizens of the world first and good basketball players second. He thought those things went hand in hand, but he always saw his role, not necessarily as a coach, but first as a teacher. And I really admired that. Like, for the winningest coach of all time to say that, I thought that was pretty good.
That's cool. Well, I mean, he can, right? He can say that because,
oh, yeah.
Well, because he's like, when you get to a certain level of skill, you have the pick. You have the pick of the crop. You can choose whoever you want. And so I think once you've kind of hit that mountaintop, you can say things like, oh, I want my students to be my players to be good citizens.
Of course.
Give me Dr. Dribbles.
Of course. You know, so Ian, I have a weird question for you. Does your high school have sports at it?
Not organized, no.
Okay, I suspect
disorganized. They're just teaching poetry and somebody throws a fucking football through the classroom.
It's actually kind of funny. We have poetry classes. We have organized poetry classes. And then basketball sort of interrupts. John Wooden just shows up and plays basketball.
Somebody blows a whistle and there's like somebody a wrestling match in the middle of the room.
Okay, so the high school that I teach at has every sport. Like, we're a large public high school. And not only do we have every sport, we are incredibly competitive in almost every sport that we play, right? We have many state championships. We're frequently at the top of the conference, etc. But one of the things that blows me away is like, A, kind of what you're saying. Like, we have programs who are dominant, who do things like John Wooden recommends. Like, they cut problem players even when they're incredibly talented, right? Because they have a lot of talented players. Now, I, for the last 8 years, have coached tennis at that school, right? Like, we are a fine program. We have some years where we're very good. We have some years where we're very, very bad. But, like, we don't always have that luxury, right? Like, it's tough to cut a kid for character problems, right? So I think, like, what you say is totally...
Sure feels good, though, huh?
Yeah, but boy, when they have it coming.
As John Wooden once said...
Yep.
Let your plans be dark and impenetrable as night, and when you move, fall like a thunderbolt.
Yeah, I love that part of the book that Joe read.
Famous.
So, did we cut you off there, Joe? I'm not sure if you hit your point.
I think I maybe had somewhere else to go, but I
who knows, though, right?
You should read John Wooden.
Brilliant. All right. Okay, so we know what the best book ever is. We don't even have to talk about it.
Yeah, let's not worry about it. I mean, everyone knows what we think about this.
Everybody knows what the best book ever. But what about the worst book ever? What's the worst book ever written?
We could maybe say that in unison.
Yeah.
Like I think like the consensus that we have ranked the books, like the literati have all agreed. We have ranked them from first to last.
Yeah. We gathered in our underground chambers. We lit the ceremonial torches. You know, we burned the fennel and then we figured it out. Nick, would you like to count us down, do a 3-2-1, and then after one, we in unison share what is the universally acknowledged worst book ever?
No, I'm not going to do that.
Great.
Perfect. Well, nice way to commit to the bit. Ian, maybe we should count.
Yeah.
And then just say it.
3-2-1
50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, what? I'm sorry.
No.
Did we attend the same meeting of the literati? No. Were you there?
Well, I go on Tuesdays.
Tuesdays is where the schism meets. Oh, Joe. Let's talk about the worst book ever. That sounds good.
Excuse me, Dr. Dribbles? Dr. Dribbles?
Yes, that's my name.
Dr.
Don't wear it out. I'm going to talk about Kobe Bryant, who was also a Southern California-based basketballer. And he overlapped with John Wooden by a little bit in terms of time period, but not very much at all in terms of personal philosophy. Kobe is less interested in kind of like being admirable or being morally good, being a good citizen. He's more interested in like doing what it takes to be successful. So this book is kind of his, it's a blend of his tricks, the things he did to become sort of the dominant player he was, as well as his personal philosophy in terms of like how to be a good shooter of hoops.
Wow. Okay. So it sounds like while John Wooden is like admirable and stoic and all those things, it sounds like Kobe Bryant's kind of a jerk.
Well, is there poetry in your book?
Good question.
There's not
are
poetry.
The pictures in your book?
Okay, so that's
there
point,
are pictures.
That's points for Ian. Oh, double
coming.
Points for Ian. Yeah. Then. 2 points for Ian. No poetry and pictures.
So
anyway,
this is a really strange but cool book. And it's like the number one Amazon bestseller under basketball, which is totally not how I chose it.
wait, hold on. Are the pictures all of him?
Of course.
No, there's some pictures of other people too. They're photographs
Wooden?
Of basketball stuff.
Okay.
The photographs. So he's Kobe Bryant was kind of a Renaissance man. He had a lot of different kind of interests and skills, and one of these is clearly sort of like design, visual design, aesthetic stuff. So the Lakers wore jerseys which he designed. After he died in 2020, the Lakers wanted to honor him, and so they wore all black jerseys, which were designed by him before he passed away. So like
after he died. This wasn't sort of posthumous like miracle.
No, it's not a zombie. No, he wasn't a zombie or a vampire. Okay. He was
no. Good question though, Joe.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So he's really invested in design and in visual stuff. And so this book is laid out really beautifully, and it's got some really awesome photographs kind of from his entire career, as well as locker room stuff. So there's not like a bunch of pretty mountainsides and trees and forests so much. It's more about like on the court.
No bangers. who wrote this book? Did he write it? Is this about him or did he write this? Sorry. If you said this, I'm sure you did.
It's similar to what Joe's book sounds like, except for it's got more of an edge, and also there's less life story. It's much more about like, hey, I am one of the best players ever. here's how that happened.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds pretty good. And he's like, instruction manual.
Kind of. But he's also like, it's really, really weird. So there is a balance of like, you can do this. Here's how I did it. You can do it too. And he's also very, very open about just saying like, it's not for everybody. He says greatness is not for everybody. He says, some folks just don't want to put in the work. And I also get the sense some folks just don't have the processing power. The way he talks about it, he is always thinking about his game, always like improving how he can dominate on the court and in life.
Okay. Like when you, I don't know, whenever I hear about like some sports person who is at the top of their sports, they seem to be crazy. Like they're crazy.
They don't have a healthy work-life balance.
They don't have an off button. It is just like 16 hours a day on their respective court field and they don't do anything else but that. And so does he talk about how crazy he is? Like is he aware of that like insane drive?
So the drive, yes. I would say there are definitely people who don't have a good work-life balance in sports and in other, you know, other arenas as well, other walks of life as well. There are always going to be those people who are near the top at or near the top who you like, they say, oh, I sleep 2 hours a night or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't have a family life. I haven't seen my child since 1968, you know, and so there are people like that, but he, I think, is in control. He just cuts out everything that's not necessary. So there's this really, cool moment when he talks about...
Is love necessary?
No, exactly. So he gets to a point where he's kind of like thinking in the abstract about his play and his desire to be kind of the best that ever was. And he says, I wasn't willing to sacrifice my game, but I also wasn't willing to sacrifice my family time. So I decided to sacrifice sleep. And that was that. So he sets aside time for the non-basketball things that matter to him, but he's not going to be like playing video games or going to parties.
What about a walk in a park?
Well, he might if it's with his family.
Right. Or if he gets to dribble the whole way.
But if it's just for like Kobe to have fun.
Kobe doesn't have fun.
He's going to go to the gym. He's going to practice shooting the balls.
Yeah.
Right. He's like a border collie. Like he is single-minded. Like he has a job to do. It is to be the best basketball player on the planet. And everything else is tertiary.
And he barks at sheep.
Everything except for his family. That's the weird thing. Like a lot of times you hear these success stories and they sacrifice sort of the intangibles like family, but he's committed to this, which is, I think, really, really cool and kind of heads up.
Now you don't think that was like a second draft edit. Like you don't think like he passed it off to somebody and he's like, fuck everything besides basketball. And they're like, Hey champ, quick word about tone.
When did he write this? Yeah, was this like after retirement or like what's the time frame here?
So he bounced into the basketball game in the late 1990s and he retired in 2016. His last game, actually, he was kind of like faltering throughout his last season. His body was breaking down. The last game of the season, his last game of his career, he went out and scored 60 points, which is a lot of points for a basketballer to score. He published this 2 years after he retired. So kind of as he's had a chance to wind down from literal decades on the court, he had some yards behind him. Greatness. And he also, like, by this time he had founded his sort of media content creation company, Granity, and also he had won the Oscar. So he was very much sort of transitioning into being one of these elder statesmen of basketball by this point in his career.
Oh yeah, what did he win the Oscar for? Yeah, he won an Oscar for some documentary, right? What?
He was the lead actor in Avengers Endgame.
That's what I thought.
Yep, that was him. Also, he did a short form documentary called Dear Basketball. One of the things that I love about this book is just how sort of confident and comfortable he is in his own excellence. So there's this awesome section where he's just like,
let's be nice.
Yeah, you guys have that problem.
Holy
right?
shit, I'm perfect.
Well, kind of like there's so the first section is very, very abstract. The first section is very much like, here's how I think about going on the court. Here's how I think about dominating. Here's how I think about like training my body. And that's pretty awesome. Like he talks about being in control of his body. But then he gets into the second section of the book and he basically like ticks through all of the great basketball players who were concurrent with him that he played against. And he tells you how much better he is than they were.
I love this. So he gets up there and he's like, I'm about to make an argument for you all. And listen, like, here's my thesis. I'm the greatest ever.
I'm
and
better.
Here's my evidence, right?
He's like,
wow.
He's like, Kevin Garnett. Kevin Garnett was good, but he was really slow. I knew that if I could get him off balance, I could run around him and shoot the basketball and score a bunch of points.
That is kind of what you want to hear. That's what you want to hear him say. Like, yeah. if I am reading a book about the greatest player, like, I want to know specifics about how you were better and how you made the better dunks.
And I feel like it's the opposite of every sports interview ever. Like, every time you see a post-game interview, they're always... Yeah, they're always like, oh, he was good. He's good competitor. Everyone's just out there doing their best, really. It, but he's like, no, fuck Kevin Garnett. That guy's slow. Like, I could run around him all day.
It's amazing. So much like sports interaction is dominated by this publicist talk. Like, oh, we left it all on the court. I'm proud of our effort. You know, we made some shots. They made some shots more than we did. Like when there's an argument between two players, like, oh, yeah, he's passionate about sports. I really appreciate that. But, like, there's all this, like, wishy-washy stuff. And what Kobe does is, like, no, Ray Allen was maybe one of the best players I played against, but I could still dominate him because I learned how to lean my elbow into his ribs, and he hated that. He hated me having my elbow against his ribs, so he would back off, and then I'd drive past him and drop in an easy layup. So it's confidence. The kind of larger point is, yes, Kobe is the greatest player, and he certainly believes he's the greatest player, but also Kobe had a different knowledge. Like, Kobe knew all these other stars. He knew what they hated. He knew how to get them, and he would exploit them every time he played them. And so he had this like encyclopedic like database, like, oh, I'm going up against so-and-so. I'm going up against Allen Iverson. I need to do this to disrupt Allen Iverson's flow, and then he would do it. And that's just, it's scientific enough that it doesn't seem too arrogant.
So he comes across as admirable, probably, right? Like you kind of admire Kobe Bryant. Hmm. Is he at all likable?
I think so, but it's not like, I would not want to have a beer with him because he comes off as, I would be intimidated that Kobe Bryant would be like reading me and determining.
He'd be like, I can drink this beer so much better than this lanky dork.
You'd be like looking at me and be like, interesting, interesting. I could exploit this and I could do that. Like, I would love to learn from Kobe Bryant.
Do you have to love Kobe Bryant to read this book? Is there any, are you getting anything out of this past learning about Kobe Bryant?
I wasn't going to talk about this because it's like personal history, but I used to hate Kobe Bryant so much because I had other teams when Kobe was like, when Kobe was dominant, I rooted for the San Antonio Spurs and the Detroit Pistons, and they could not really, nobody could really solve Kobe Bryant. And I disliked him so, so much. And even getting into this book, I was kind of like, meh, here we go.
Yeah. Love to hate him.
Honestly, the work ethic and the creativity and really the grit he shows. He talks about one time he's out on the court and he fractures his index finger, and he goes off the court, goes back to the locker room. They do the x-rays, like, yeah, it's fractured. And he looks at his trainer and he says, hey, is it going to get worse if I keep playing? And they're like, well, no, it can't get worse, but you'll be in a ton of pain. And he's like, well, I would like to go back out there and play. So let's tape me up and get me back out there. And he went out there and finished. He finished the game. He was unstoppable. Even though I hated that, reading this book gave me like a sense of his human side. And also, like I said, creativity. So he had an ankle problem. This is one of my favorite moments in the entire book. He had an ankle problem, sprained his ankle, had like recovery issues. And he was like, my ankles were weak. So I looked around and I tried to figure out what it took to strengthen my ankles. And I determined it was tap dancing. So I took up tap dancing in the off season. I became a good tap dancer and my ankles got stronger.
Amazing. That's pretty good. That's dedication. Like a lot of athletes creativity. Talk about, like, I hit the gym, I ran more sprints, like I went vegan, right? But he's like, yeah, I tap danced. Like, are you man enough to tap dance for your ankles?
You got to respect someone who has this level of drive.
Like, is this like the art of war? Are they going to be like teaching this in boardrooms or like in MBA programs? Am I going to like need a copy of this Kobe Bryant book?
This book, I actually have written down in my notes, this is akin to The Art of War, and that it's got this kind of pop philosophy going on. So he's got these little quotable quotes. Like I said, I already read you, greatness is not for everybody. He just says, like, some folks aren't cut out for greatness. And that's not really, that's not so much a diss. It's more just like, yeah, like, if you want to be great, cool, but not everyone has to be. He says, some people enjoy looking at a watch. Others are happier figuring out how it works. He says, you have to work hard in the dark to shine in the light. So there are all these little kind of sayings, these little philosophical nuggets that are broadly applicable. I think just like with Art of War, they might make sense in the basketball context. But so there's this, these chapters are really, really short. These are really like nice bite-sized chapters. He has like a couple of pages and that's the whole chapter. And each chapter is on something different. And so he has this chapter about how he read the ref's handbook. This is late in the book. And by this time, I'm already like on Kobe's side. If he had led with this, I would have been like, Kobe, you son of a gun, I'm done with you. But no, he kind of, we get to see him tap dancing and playing through a broken finger. And then we get to this last bit, this part towards the end. He says, I read the ref's handbook and I learned that refs have different places on the court where they're supposed to be. And then I thought about that and I realized that means they have blind spots. And then I realized I can change my play to exploit those blind spots. And when the refs can't see me, I can travel, I can hold, I can break the rules. If they don't see it, it doesn't happen.
It's like being in zero gravity. All rules are off in this blind spot.
Just like zero gravity.
Just like zero gravity.
Does so he Kobe talk Bryant a lot about zero gravity? I love it. I love it when sports players cheat. it's like, does this book talk at all about how he cheated on his wife?
Different cheating. Speaking of different cheating,
is that different cheating?
Oddly, it doesn't go into that. And this is one of the things that, so when Kobe had those problems, as a young person, I was like, yeah, he's a chump. That serves him right. He's the worst. See, clearly. By all accounts, so I did some research on this for today's episode. By all accounts, he sort of admitted that he was in the wrong. He and his wife were going to get divorced, and after a couple of years, they patched it up. The sense is that sort of as he got older and less wild, he kind of simmered down. He doesn't go so far as to say, like, when I was a young player, I was a chump, but that's kind of implied. He kind of implies that as he got older, he became wiser and more mature, which is cool. I wish he had gone further and said,
yeah.
I'm glad I've grown wiser. I used to be a chump, but you know, anything's better than nothing.
Yeah.
So this week is tough because I don't really want to read either of these books.
I think Ian has shown a surprising breadth of sports knowledge.
It seemed like Ian wanted this theme more than the rest of us. Seemed like he was the most prepared to the masses, before.
And I know how many of our litheads are avid bracketologists.
Love sports.
Right.
Love it.
Strong crossover, big Venn diagram, like litheads and bracketologists.
Kobe Bryant was named after meat. I'm sorry. There's so many wonderful little facts that I didn't really get to because they didn't make sense, but I really want to share this with the litheads. There is a a strain of beef, a Japanese strain of beef called Kobe beef.
This can't be correct.
And his parents saw that on a menu, and they named him after that.
You're kidding.
I am dead serious. It's 100% true.
Joe, you lose. Now, I know your coach was named after a wood, but I think
Wood was named after my coach.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's stupid. So stupid. I love it so much. It's the best.
What food did you
do
name
you think
your child
people's
after?
Names really yeah. define what they're going to be? Like, he was named after the best cut of meat. Therefore, he was the best at what he decided to do with his life. Do you think any correlation there?
You don't see many MVPs named Hot Dog. We'll just put it that way.
Well, except for that one guy.
Litheads, this is the sound of me tearing up my notes. Litheads, we appreciate hearing from you. If you want to reach out to the show, the best way to do it is through the social media of your choice. Tumblr, Friendster, etc. We would like for you to leave us a review. 5 stars, if you please. And yeah, I think that's it. Litheads, we love you. We appreciate that you keep coming back week after week. Congratulations, Dr. Dribbles.
Thank you. Thank you. My victory quote this week is Kobe Bryant also wrote a series of young adult novels, which I can describe best as Harry Potter meets basketball. So this is from the first one. And this is a little comical moment from the first of Kobe Bryant's Harry Potter meets basketball young adult novels. It's entitled The Wizenard Series. Background for this, the coach, the magical coach who shows up, is named Rolabi Wizenard. So here we go. Rolabi stepped out onto the court, his hands still clasped behind his back. "That will be all for today," he announced. Peño turned to him, frowning. "We aren't going to do any drills?" Rolabi didn't seem to hear him. He waited patiently as the ball rolled back to his feet, as if it were tethered. Then he scooped it up, dropped it into his medicine bag with a distant-sounding bounce, and made his way back to the bleachers, where he sat down with his hands folded on top of his bag. As soon as he did, the locker room door slammed open with a gust of freezing wind. Rain turned, following the gale.
"Where? How did—"
Big John said. Rain glanced back at the bleachers. Once again, Rolabi Wizenard had vanished. "This ain't cool," Peño muttered.
"So we're pretty set on our coach being a witch, right?" Big John said.
Lab scowled. "What are you, 6? There are no such thing as witches."
"Aren't witches usually female?" Jerome asked.
"Yeah," AWOL said. "Men are Mitches."
Oh man, I might have to take that one back. Sounds like a lot more wisdom coming out of Joe's book.
No, men are Mitches. This is the bet that you made. Please lie in it, Nick.
Men are Mitches.
Thank you, Dr. Dribbles.